Hello, I'm Dr. John Davis, back to talk to you more about what psychology is. And in this podcast, I'd like to talk a little bit about how the conclusions of psychology are drawn and how they are more scientific than they used to be. In the early days of psychology, some very smart people came up with some quite different theories. And you can see how this might happen. You've probably experienced noticing that, say, two different people who both graduated from Ivy League schools with high grades can draw very opposite opinions about various things like abortion or gun control or those kinds of issues. And they can have very good reasons, it sounds, as if they do anyway, on their particular side of the argument. And they can make very good arguments. So we can't just listen to smart people and then assume that they are right. We can't even look at what a lot of people believe and assume that that is right, because a large number of people can be misled. Thinking can go wrong in a lot of different ways, and that's one of the things we're going to talk about in future podcasts, some of the different ways that thinking can go wrong. You must become a critical thinker. And in psychology, becoming a critical thinker means using research methods and trying to back up what you believe with some kind of research. So I'm going to talk about a couple of ways that thinking can go wrong and four ways that we use to research specific ideas to try to get some evidence of what is true. Well, we know that our thinking can go wrong based on our own background, or at least our thinking can be influenced by our background. These early psychologists, for example, like Freud, Adler, and Jung, if you look into their lives a little bit, you can easily see why they developed the theories they did, and why these, even though these theories were quite different and in some ways opposite of each other, you can see how it happened from their early lives. So we're very much affected by our own past, Freudian slip. Now, the other thing is, we are also victims of various kinds of mistakes in thinking, like the hindsight bias. The hindsight bias is mentioned in other places in these podcasts, but it's the tendency that we have to think we would have known something that we actually would not have known, or that we already knew something that we actually did not already know. We're also overconfident. We think we know more than we do. In tests where people are asked to give their opinions about certain facts, they have far more confidence than they do correctness. So the old idea that our self-concepts are all low is not, in fact, borne out by the research. Well, since our thinking can go wrong so easily, it's important that we have some kind of research method to back us up. There are four kinds of research methods in psychology. There are more than this, but we'll talk about four. There is the case study, there are surveys, there are correlations, and there is experimental method. So those are the four that we're going to talk about. Case studies are simply a look at a single instance or a single person, and then drawing conclusions about the general population based on that single person. Now, that seems like it would be a problem right up front. And yet there is a place for this. There is a place for looking at individual cases and then drawing conclusions. For example, if we want to know something about how schizophrenics act or how they respond, then you'd want to do some case studies with schizophrenics and see how they act. So in that case, it would be a good thing to do. However, to draw conclusions about the general population, as Freud did, may not be the best way to go, because you're going to have a biased sample of people attending your sessions. And he did. He didn't have the average person coming to see him. So when he drew conclusions about the average person, they're now considered to be off base, a number of them, although some others are not. The second research method, the survey, is simply surveying or sending out questionnaires to a lot of people and then getting them to send those questionnaires back to you filled out so that you can gather information. Now, if those surveys, how they're conducted depends on how accurate they're going to be. For example, let's say you mail them out, which is the easiest way to do it, or send them out through email, then are the people who send them back to you going to be a sample of the general population, or is there going to be something special about them? And you can easily make the case that there is something special or something different about a person who would respond to a survey. So you do not necessarily get the general population, and you can't draw conclusions about the general population based always on surveys, although it's better than nothing. It's better than not having any information at all. And it's probably better than case studies, which test or gather information from a great fewer number of people. The third method we're going to talk about today is correlation. And correlation simply measures the relationship between two things that vary, two variables like age and intelligence, for example. And let's say we're trying to determine whether or not intelligence changes with age. As people get older, does intelligence drop? Or does it go up? Or what happens to it? And how do those two things move together? We're not saying with correlation that one thing causes the other. Correlation does not imply causation. Now, you'll have people who will try to get you to believe that something causes something else because the two things are correlated. Here's an example I saw recently in the paper. The number of guns owned in a certain area was determined, and then the amount of crime in that area was determined, and so the conclusion was that where there were more guns, there is more crime. Now, the conclusion they want us to draw from that is that guns cause crime, or at least the author of that particular article wanted you to draw that conclusion. But there are actually three conclusions that are possible from that correlation. One is that guns cause crime. The second possible conclusion is that crime causes guns. And the third is that some third thing causes both. Now, how can that be? Guns cause crime. All right, we could say, and this was what was said in the article, that since guns were more available, they were more likely to be chosen as a weapon, and people would resort to that where they might resort to less violent means if the guns were not available. The people who would lean the other way and say that crime causes guns would say that where there is more crime, people are just simply going to buy guns to defend themselves because there's more crime in the area. So crime causes guns in that case. The third example, or the third possibility, is that there's some third thing that causes both. let's say, for example, gangs. The prevalence of gangs in that area is high. Well, crime is going to be high, and the amount of, number of guns is going to be high. But they were not either one causing the other. It was the presence of gangs that was causing both. So you can see the problem with correlation. Correlations are useful and they tell us things. For example, the intelligence and age thing, that study has been done, and there is a certain kind of intelligence that goes up with age and a certain kind that goes down with age, and that's useful information. Certain foods are eaten in certain countries and not eaten in others, and there's a prevalence of certain kinds of diseases in one of the countries but not in the other. Well, that may be useful information, or it may not be, depending on whether there is an actual cause involved or not. The fourth method of research is experimental method. Don't get the term experimental method confused with research method. These are all four research methods. So experimental method is simply one of four research methods. Okay, experimental method was developed from agriculture, and what happened there is that two plots of land side by side were tilled in order to raise a certain crop, and the idea was to be able to determine whether a certain fertilizer, a certain chemical, would cause that crop to be more productive. And so all the other variables like weather, rainfall, sunlight, soil, concentration of minerals in the soil, and amount of time spent in each plot, all of those were controlled and the same for both plots. And the only thing that was different was the fertilizer. And so if one crop turns out better than the other, then you can make the case that it is the fertilizer that was the cause. So with experimental method, you can say something about cause. With correlation, you cannot. Correlation could have three possible causes. So correlation does not imply causation, but experimental method does. There are a couple of terms, two or three terms to remember with experimental method. There is control group. That would be the plot of land that did not receive the fertilizer. That's the control group. And then there is the experimental group. That's the plot of land that did receive the fertilizer. And that fertilizer is also called the treatment. What else? The independent and dependent variables are terms to remember in experimental method. The independents get manipulated. Just keep saying that over and over yourself. We try to, in politics, for example, politicians try to manipulate the independents. All right. So what gets manipulated is the independent variable. It's just a way to remember that. In this case, it was the fertilizer. That was what got manipulated, changed from one plot of land to the other. So that would be the independent variable. The dependent variable is going to be some measure of the quality of that crop. Now we have to define that up front, and that definition of the quality of that crop is going to be our operational definition of our study or our outcome. It has to be set up front before the study starts. And in this case, let's say it's corn we're raising in these two plots, and our operational definition of the quality is going to be the height of the stalks after a certain number of months. So the height of the stalk is our operational definition of quality. Now that may or may not really be a good measure of quality. There might be other things that farmers would say are a much better measure, but for the purposes of this study, that was the operational definition we chose. So we always have to choose an operational definition. You have to have an independent and a dependent variable. You have to have a control group, an experimental group, and a treatment. And that is most of the terminology that you need to know for experimental method, which is one of four research methods. All right, well, it's important to know this and to also understand as you listen here that these kinds of things are used frequently now in psychology, that no longer do we just trust an important or smart person's ideas about how things are. And you can see from the very different ideas that some very smart people have that you can't do that. You must be a critical thinker. You must try to find some evidence to back up what is believed. Some really interesting studies have been done in psychology. I'll mention one to close with here that will also demonstrate the experimental method here a little bit more. In one study, a social psychology study, there was a control group, experimental group. The experimental group came in once a week for an hour to a psychology lab and saw an erotic film, a film with a lot of sexual content. And it was rather violent sexual content. The control group, we have to match the control group to them, so they were, both groups were chosen at random, so we had about the same age, about the same split in male and female, that sort of thing. And the control group came in once a week and saw a film, but it was an innocuous film, a film about a documentary, that sort of film. Had nothing to do with sex, and particularly not violent sex. Well, at the end of 6 weeks, both groups were then asked what kind of sentence they would give to a criminal, a person who had been charged but not yet sentenced, charged with raping a hitchhiker, picking up a hitchhiker along the road and then raping them. And so, before I tell you the results, which one would you guess would be, which group would you guess would give the greater sentence? Because one of the groups actually gave twice as long, suggested twice as long in jail as the other group. Well, think about it. It's not obvious. And in my classes, some students say one, some say the other, but if you understand that exposure to something makes us more accustomed to it and more tolerant of it, then you would probably predict that the group that had seen the sexually explicit films would give the lighter sentence, and you'd be right. They gave a sentence as half as long as the other group. This has some implications about violence in general and observing violence and whether or not people take it seriously, at least, and perhaps whether or not they'll participate in it, but that we don't know from this study. All right, so that is those are some examples of research methods and how to do critical thinking, not just to accept what someone says as being true, and in fact to question your own beliefs. We tend to believe based on our past. We tend to be overconfident. We tend to be victims of the hindsight bias. So we want to be good scientific thinkers in psychology, and we want to gather some evidence for what is true rather than believing what we most want to believe. All right, thank you for listening. There'll be more about this later. This is Dr. John Davis. Goodbye for now.